That's what we do. Yeah. Saturday mornings, we just kind of mess around. Dr. John, who we lost this week, the doctor was in the house. So there. Good morning. It's Hot and Cold. I'm Tom Gosey. It's Saturday morning, but you knew that. You're up. You're awake. You're kind of lucid. You maybe had a little bit of the coffee. And my wife and I, while we were dating, saw Dr. John. We actually, she tolerated, I think, what I would probably want to go to see for concerts. And I wanted to go see the new Riders of the Purple Sage. Long story, doesn't matter anymore. And Dr. John was there as well. And that was a perk for me. I had heard this album. And so and I think the show started at 10 o'clock. Probably around midnight, Dr. John comes on stage. And the man comes on. And he just had that New Orleans kind of laid-back attitude going. He comes strutting out on the stage in white top hat and tails, all white, struts around the piano a couple times and sits down and just starts cranking stuff, man. I tell you what, it was the new writers were okay, but Dr. John was the show, I tell you. So sorry to hear that we lost another great one. Somebody, I was reading some stuff about him, and somebody posted a thing that he has a series of videos on how to play piano, and this person who was a pianist watched a video and said, why am I playing? Why should I play piano when this guy plays like this? So I've had that feeling when it comes to musical instruments myself. But anyway, so a couple of things, a program note. Last week I mentioned I have this shed that we're trying to sell, and my friend Henry came to look at it last week. And I realized after I'd spoken to him about coming to look at it that I didn't describe it properly. The shed is a shell. It's not finished. It doesn't have siding on it. It has a flat roof right now. Has a door. It comes with a window you can put in, or I could put in even, I guess, maybe if I had to. But and it's still available because Henry didn't need a project. He's got enough projects, but that's okay. I hadn't seen Henry in a long time, so we got a chance to catch up. So that was nice. So, I've got most of the stuff out of the shop except for that stupid shed, and so it's still there. And I'm happy to show it over the weekend. If somebody wants to get it, they're going to get such a deal. I'm telling you, oh, you don't believe it. Insulated shed, 8 feet by 12 feet. I do not want to take it to my house if I don't have to. I'm not going to give it away. But we'll see. Somebody out there needs an insulated shed. Needs a it could be a small man cave. That's what it could be. You know what? Or what do they call it? There was a term for a woman cave, I guess. Whatever. Go outside and close the door behind you and be totally isolated. That's what you need. I got a deal for you. So I've come to appreciate. We are settling in. We're starting to catch up on cars. We're seeing a lot of people coming in, which is nice. Folks who have heard, you know, we were moving, and we're busy, very busy, as a matter of fact. And I've come to appreciate, because of what I do, I've come to appreciate the fact that I need to build more shelves. And I haven't built any shelves in weeks. I don't know what I've been thinking, but I got the lumber out on Thursday or Wednesday, and it sits on the floor because we've just been busy with folks fixing cars and getting cars ready for folks. We've got a number of people coming in today to look at stuff, so I spent the week just getting cars prepped. So we're getting there. I don't think the – and I guess I slowly am clearing a bigger space in the shop. So that's good. I got the plug-in. We've had for 2 months, over 2 months, a plug-in Prius that was ready to sell, and I just needed to do some touch-up on it and hadn't done it. So I finally got that done. That is out, and which freed up a spot in my shop for another car, and they just keep coming in and going out. So that's All good. The shop is working as best it can with the clutter that I have, and that's why I need the shelves. It's just to get stuff up out of the way. Because we, on top of all the stuff that I do with cars, we've been really too busy with tank orders, and we've got to be prepared to work on that. I need to be a little more organized in my shop for tank orders, you know, in my spare time, I guess. We'll do the tanks, although Pete does the tanks mostly. I don't have to touch him that much, but I still have to have the place ready for him to work, and it ain't. So there. My friend Justin, who's coming to pick up the junk cars, scrap cars I have at my old shop, hasn't picked them up yet. So I have been going over there in the evening and taking part. You know, I was over there. I needed a part for something. I forget what it was now. And I'm looking at the car. I'm like, well, I can't leave that. So I go back to the place where all the tools are now and get some more tools and come back. And so I filled the car up three nights this week, filled up my Prius with parts that I've been pulling off of other cars. Then this is not healthy. Although these are all parts I needed, so it kind of worked out okay. But the parts I didn't need, I didn't need them today, but they're on the shelf now. So, and there's a couple more. So if he doesn't come, I don't think he's going to come on the weekend. So I might just go back. I'm going to need more shelves though. What was that? I keep thinking of the line from Jaws. We're going to need a bigger boat. I'm looking at the shop and thinking, well, you know, we could use a bigger shop. We got to go. We're going to take a break. It's hot and cold. Mr. Dr. John, Mac Rebenak. We'll be right back. And we're back. It's 8:21. It's hot and cold on Saturday morning. Good morning again. I'm Tom. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. We got the text line up and running. 601-207-4478 is the text line. And no text, no phones. So that's it. We can play Dr. John all morning. I'm okay with that. Last night was in Bangor for the art walk, and my youngest child, who is no longer a child, my youngest daughter, is displaying art at the West Market Coffee Shop, and I think my wife put it most accurately. She said, "Where's this stuff come from?" But we're all very happy for her and proud, and got to meet some of her friends, which was a great time. And I lived in Bangor for, I don't know, almost over 20 years, and boy, it's changed. All for the good. I'm very impressed with the downtown. Is a very important part of Bangor now. And it's nice to see. Let's see. We go over there. We hit the button. We talk on line one. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Oh, hi. I'm calling about a vapor barrier problem, I think, trying to avoid one.
Mm-hmm.
I built my house myself, and I put Tyvek around the studs, and then I put shiplap over it. Now I'm getting ready for vinyl siding, like 14 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm debating whether I should put something under the siding or if I'm going to create like a double moisture barrier.
Well, Tyvek is breathable, so I don't think you create a double barrier. I don't think it's hypercritical if you already have it there. I mean, it's there for as an air barrier, but it will allow moisture to pass through. So I don't think if you're putting vinyl over it, it's a critical thing to put
Can
another
I put
layer.
Something under the vinyl, like a foam or something, or will that create a problem?
If you're doing foam, it creates an interesting dilemma, perhaps, and that's this: that if you go with a relatively thin layer of foam, that is a foam is going to be a barrier regardless.
But yeah, I'm thinking quarter inch at the most.
Yeah, if you're using something thin like that, I wouldn't even use it. And the reason is that it is a moisture barrier and has more potential for trapping moisture. And if you're not using at least inch and a half or 2 inch foam, I don't think if you're using the quarter inch fan fold, save your money. Put it somewhere else where it's more efficient.
Okay. All right, great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Yeah, you know, the fan, you just have to stop and think and look about it a little bit. You got a piece of insulation that, and this goes for the foil-faced bubble wrap, which is a whole other animal, but similar characteristics in the sense it's relatively thin. It's not very big in that it's not covered. Maybe you can get bubble wrap in 4 foot widths, but you're going to not do a lot. It doesn't accomplish much in terms of insulation value. And they charge a lot of money. If you we go back to last week, we were talking about cost per R value per square foot. If you just look at cost per square foot, forget about R value for just a moment. It's expensive. If you factor in true R value, and just for the sake of discussion here, let's just analyze, or let me give you a little bit of a feel as to what a bubble wrap insulation does. It creates layers, okay? So it's a quarter inch thick, and it's got the little capsules, the air bubbles, right? The quarter inch thick, maybe slightly thicker, maybe not. And it has foil on both faces. So those barriers, those two layers, the inside wall and the outside wall, maybe add potentially an R2. The quarter inch air gap is not really doing anything because that's already kind of factoring into the fact that you've got these two layers, these barriers. I think the R2 is probably a little bit on the optimistic side, but let's call it R2 just for the sake of discussion. So then go back and get a price per square foot on that and factor it to the fact that you've got an R2. They're going to tell you it's like, it performs the same as R40 or R20 or something. That's basically just a big lie. They're playing with certain installations. You might have some performance that has similarities to that, but really not. It's not going to be sealable as well. It's too floppy. It has too many negatives. It just doesn't work the way it's supposed to. And then compare that cost per R value per square foot to a piece of foam insulation. Now, foam insulation at Home Depot say ain't that cheap, but look at the R value. Their R values are accurate. And do the math. And I think you'll find that, you could do the same thing with the fan fold. The fan fold is a little bit different because that's a extruded polystyrene foam. I don't know what they claim for an insulation value, but it ain't much. But it probably is a much more accurate number, and they might call it 2 or 3, and I should look it up during the break. That would be good, but it's not much. But it's not worth the aggravation, to be honest, and it's not worth the cost. If you're gonna do it, you're gonna put foam on the outside. You got to do it right. And I started to go down that path with the caller. Anything under R10 on the outside of a building, as the caller was asking about, is going to create potential moisture problems inside the wall. So it should be R10 or greater and sealed properly. That keeps the wall cavity above the dew point. It keeps it warm enough that you will not have condensation forming unless you're a spaghetti house or something. If you have a lot of moisture in the house, there's a little more potential of a problem, but usually not. And if it... there's no vapor barrier on the inside, as there should not be. It would, any moisture buildup would tend to dry to the inside, but we still would want to have that R value on the outside be high enough. So I tell you what, if you came down to our new place, you would see the office, the windows stand off the wall of the building an inch and a half. And the reason for that is we're going to add R10, go figure, on the outside of that building. So the windows are in the proper plane in terms of being able to shed water. We don't have to flash around the windows. They're out where they should be. So it looks a little odd. Not doesn't look that odd, but it looks a little different right now. And you'll see that if you stop by our new place in Stockton Springs. Not saying you have to, but you can if you want to. You'll see. And probably next week, you know, my spare time when I'm not going to build the shelves, when I'm ignoring building shells for another week, we are going to get some foam up on there and OSB, and we're going to shingle it. My spare time. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. It texts us 601-207-4478. While we have the time, let's take another break here. It is 8:30 straight up. And one more Dr. John, okay? I'm sorry, but the other one I just played, Such a Night, has been stuck in my head all week before I heard that he had passed away. And this other one has been stuck in my head for 40 years, so... It's a strange place. What can I tell you? And it's hot and cold. It's Saturday morning. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. It's 8:36. It's hot and cold. It's Saturday morning. Good morning again. Me llamo Tomas. It's 8:36. I said that. I don't remember how to say 36 in any other language than the one I'm speaking. So, my friend Alan at General Appliance wants me to give you his phone number, which is 989-4341, because if you need appliance parts or service, you need help. We all need help sometimes. And if a major appliance breaks down, you want that number, you want to know Alan, because he will help you get it running. And I tell you, I was thinking about it when we were moving. We had a small refrigerator, and Alan helped me out a couple of years ago because we had a small refrigerator in our office at the time, and I announced, let's defrost the refrigerator. And then I became impatient and took the scissors, where this is headed, because the scissors are there in the office, and let's just loosen the ice in the freezer. And I made a hole in the thing, and it went psss. And so much for the ozone layer and for the refrigerator. And Alan bailed me out. He thought, He found the story whimsical and bailed me out because he had there a refurbished, very nice GE, bigger than a dorm refrigerator, like two times bigger than a dorm refrigerator, perfect for an office. And we still have it functioning to this day. I moved it, and I didn't break it. And we defrosted it in the process. I did not go near it while it was being defrosted. I stayed away. Maria took care of it, and it all went back together nicely. The frost was gone, and the refrigerator's refrigerating, and we have cool beverages just in time for the warm weather. So all good stuff. And Alan is on Center Street and Brewer, open 9 to 4 Monday through Friday. So if you're looking for appliance parts and service, 989-4341 is that magic number that will make you happy to know that there's somebody who can help you. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. The text line 601-207-4478. If you'd like to give a call or a text this fine Saturday morning. What am I doing in the studio on a morning like this? Talking. I've been jerry-rigging my lawnmower to mow the lawn every week, and I went last Saturday. I was at work and did stuff, and I'm going to mow the lawn. So I don't have to mow the lawn on Sunday, and I got out there, and the mower would not start. So I ordered some parts for it, which just came in the other day. So it just wouldn't do anything. It turned over, it wouldn't start. So I said, okay, it's just not today. Today's not the day for the lawnmower. And I went inside and took a nap. Went out Sunday and started right up. Don't tell me how or why. But it's got a new plug, it's got a new air filter. I've got some other bits coming. I think it's corrosion. That's what I'm thinking. We blame everything on corrosion. But so this is the perfect weekend to fix the lawnmower. Perfect lawnmower fixing weather. My friend Mike Dow is back from vacation. He went on it sounds like a lovely cruise down in the Caribbean. And we were discussing swimming, and he reminded me, I told him the tale of woe of when I was a kid. I was tall and skinny and was in the Boy Scouts, and you had to swim in the Boy Scouts. If you wanted to get a swimming merit badge, you had to swim. And I would jump in the pool. Now I went to the YMCA with a bunch of my friends, and I would jump in the pool and on the deep end now. I did learn how to swim, excuse me. But I jump in the pool on the deep end, and I'd be standing on the bottom of the pool. I had absolutely no buoyancy, or at least not enough. So I'm thinking now, as middle age has come and gone, I have enough buoyancy. I haven't been in a pool in a while, but I think I'm buoyant enough. But I did learn this one lesson, and when you went to summer camp, you had to be certified as whether you could swim or not. And I always preferred not to, if I'm swimming, not to, you know, you put your face in the water and you take your face out. I don't want to do that. So I realized that, I'm hesitant to say this because I can see the text coming in. My head was buoyant enough that if I was doing the backstroke, I could just keep my, just barely keep my nose. It's a big nose. It would stay out of the water. I guess it'd be like kind of a snorkel, huh? And I could swim. So, you know, you get by, you adapt to the situation. And it worked. And I was certified as a swimmer. I was careful not to go out too much in the river. I impressed my luck, let me put it that way. And I would at some point like to know how buoyant I am. But, you know, you have friends, they jump in the water and they're bobbing around like a cork. You know, if you're trying to tread water, I could tread water till the cows came. I could keep myself afloat. But you were using so much, I would be using so much energy to try to keep my skinny butt up in the. Anyway, there's reasons to be buoyant. And discovering the fact of nature that my head was buoyant where the rest of me was not is there's some terrible jokes in there. Anyway, our phone number 1-800, at least I keep myself entertained with my stories. 1-800-966-1039. The text line is 601-207-4478. No text this morning. I can't believe it. And I don't know about where you are. I'm on the beautiful coast of Maine. And the black flies are out. If I get away from where I live, where it's always windy, or the wind is, you know, around 4 p.m, the wind always quiets down at my house. The black flies come out to say howdy and just to make their presence known. All right, here come the texts. Buoyancy, buoyant head, I would be indicative of a hollow head. Well, yeah, that was the inference I made, or an airhead. I mean, you know, but it works. Or a fathead. Maybe that's it. A body fat is certainly more buoyant than muscle and bone. So, can I have some of that spare time, please? Yeah. Okay, our phone number again, 1-800-966-1039, Texas 601-207-4478. I was walking around the building, our new building, yesterday, and I'm looking at the back of it, and it's posted, the sidewalls are 12 feet high. So it's high enough that I'm thinking, you know, I could put an addition on the back here and have a whole separate zone of heat. So all of a sudden I'm thinking, zoning the heat out. I reminded me of the fact that years ago, the first radiant floor we did was for a Varney Auto Parts store, which used to be on Outer Broadway. And we did the job for Bill Varney, and we did a solar system to heat the floor and an oil system for backup. And it all worked pretty much flawlessly. And the building was extremely comfortable. And we had one area, though, and this is what got me remembering this, was there was an area, a truck bay, where he had a delivery truck. It was a diesel truck. He wanted to keep that somewhat warm. And by somewhat warm, I mean about 35, 45 degrees, something like that. Separate thermostat, separate radiant floor for that zone of heat. And it worked well. And the whole building worked well, as a matter of fact. And we had it run on a computer and this is going back to like 1985, run on a computer and time of day. So when the store was closed, the heat would set back and it would come up in the morning before, you know, before they would open up. So when folks came in, it was warm. And I could tell you from experience, the shop that we just built, radiant floor, building is not completely insulated. We were insulating the walls. So essentially it was an uninsulated structure. The perimeter of the slab's not insulated. And when I finally got the heat up and running, in about an hour and a half of running the heat, which was only putting in about 60,000 BTUs an hour because I was monitoring it, it was sensible heat that was warm enough, and this was still pretty cold. There was still some ice in the space on the floors, but it would get warm enough that you could, you know, function comfortably. And that's the beauty of a radiant slab, is the fact that the radiant slab is radiating heat up from your feet to about 6 feet off the floor. And I'll never forget that we had the system up and running. I think they were still setting up the store. And we got up near the ceiling of this building, which was probably about 12 feet. And at the ceiling, it was actually cooler than it was at the floor. So it made a big difference in terms of the way the whole thing worked. And that's kind of the efficient. And this building wasn't really well insulated. And my recollection is that the system didn't use a lot of oil. We had a pretty good size solar system there. And the solar system, every sunny day, carried the building. This was a solar thermal system, made hot water. And now I have to try to remember. I want to say the building was 5,000 square feet. And the solar system, there were vacuum tubes, but there was 11 of them at about 30 square feet per. So it wasn't a huge system. It did a good job. Anyway, let's go to the phone. We got some phone calls coming in at 1-800-966-1039. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hi, Tom. Hey. This is one of your previous customers, and but we have a different type of question.
Okay.
We were wondering if in, obviously in Bangalore, there's a lot of cash fuel oil dealers, and they're usually, what, 20, 30, 40 cents less than the going rate. And I'd like to use one or try one out in the area that you're in. I'm in Swanville, and I didn't know down in this area if there might be a particular cash dealer that would be available to service
Swanville. Yeah, I don't know anybody in the area. The ones I'm aware of have a kind of a fixed price. If you get if you Google Main Oil, you can get a website that would allow you to shop it a little bit. I found that website wasn't always up to date, but at least it gives a comparative feel. I'm not sure how frequently they update it. And this time of year, oil prices aren't necessarily that volatile anyway. But I would get on the main, I think I should know this and I don't. Let me just type it in real quick. I think it's mainoil.com. Mainoil.com. And you can check the different regions in the state of Maine. I'm going to look here while I'm doing the radio show, because that's what I do. Midcoast Maine. I'm not sure Midcoast Maine covers where we live, but let's see. Yeah, there's one in Belfast. But no, most of them are south, and there's no, you know, it probably averaging 270. If we go to Bangor, just out of curiosity, let's look at Bangor. They tend to be a little more competitive. In Bangor, there's folks that are selling oil for $2.45 a gallon. So that does make a difference. The problem is those folks will not come down to Swanville. So hopefully that will change at some point, but the is what it is, I guess. It always pays to shop the price. And it's mainoil.com. Take a look at it. Just keep an eye on things. And it gives you the name and contact information, or at least a link to their websites for most folks who are fuel dealers, or at least some. I'm looking at some here that don't have a link. And it's a question of competition too. How many dealers are there in a given area as to if you've got some wiggle on price. Competition kind of makes the price a little more competitive. That made perfect sense, didn't it? Let's see. What else we got? I got nothing else here. All right. So no text, no phone calls. That's fine. Getting back to the radiant floor thing for a minute, the radiant slab, I've noticed some folks in my area are putting in some buildings with radiant slabs. And, you know, there's some good economy there. I have a good friend who did a house with a radiant slab and super insulated the structure. And it's been very economical. He's actually using natural gas where he is. He's in southern Maine. But he decided he was going to try to save some money on his floor covering by having the floors stamped and, I guess I'd call it stained. You know, they put color into it. And apparently whoever did it messed it up. And the color is fading and coming out. So he called me and asked me about putting down vinyl plank flooring over this. And, I just don't know because it's a relatively new material. He checked with the manufacturer, and it seems like it's okay. It's a floating floor. And I think if it's going to work, the secret here, there's two secrets. One is being a concrete slab, the floor temperature doesn't have to be that warm. So if you want the room at 70 degrees, the floor probably has to be at 90 degrees. That's not an extraordinarily hot temperature for most building materials to be exposed to on a continuous basis, say in the season. And if the floor can float so it can expand and contract freely, it's going to be okay. Now, we're talking plastic, so that's a little bit of a wild card. And plastic has a higher coefficient of expansion and contraction with temperature than, say, wood does. So that could be an issue, but my caveat to him was make sure you have a big enough expansion joint, which is prescribed anyway by the manufacturers. And that is what, in his case, is taking time because he's retrofitting. So he's got to take baseboards off, put the expansion joint where the baseboard's going to be, if he takes the baseboards off, which I believe he is, or you could put a quarter round against it. But you've got to have that space, and it's got to be the right space, the right dimension to make sure that when you go from 90 degrees when you're heating down to a 70 degree slab in the summer when you're not heating, that it'll expand and contract adequately. Now, that's not a big temperature swing, but you certainly have to accommodate for it because it is going to move. And for any radiant floor, it makes sense, unless it's a ceramic tile floor. It makes sense to have a floating floor, whether it's wood or laminate, or in this case, a vinyl slab, a vinyl plank. You don't want it stuck to the slab if you have this differential going on. So let's do this. Let's take a break. We got time for this, too. I was going to play this, okay? You remember this song? The Eagles? 19-something. It was a long time ago. Okay, it was a great song, right? Okay. I thought that was an Eagles song. It's not. It's an Osborne Brothers song. The Osborne Brothers, big bluegrass band. And so we're going to swing out of here with the Osborne Brothers version because you've heard the Eagles version. And they wrote it. The Osborne Brothers wrote that song, and we thought the Eagles were hot stuff, huh? Here we go. Okay, we're back. 906 is Hot and Cold Saturday morning, hour number two. And phone number is 1-800-966-1039. The text line is 601-207-4478. If you'd like to do either of those things, we make them work. I hit the buttons and we talk. And we don't talk because that's dial tone. I waited too long. I had to play the music. You know, the music, I've got it all queued up, man. We could just keep rolling here. Spanky's out in the other room with Alfalfa and their and Weezer. We got to go grease Weezer is what we got to do Saturday morning. You can't get away without greasing Weezer. Let's go back to the phone. So I won't play the music too much this time. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hi. I'd like to have Tom help me with trying to find a place where you can buy solar batteries or and the panels.
You're talking to Tom. Turn your radio down, please.
Oh, okay.
Okay, because you're going to get confused otherwise. Okay. So what are you trying to do?
Well, he needs to replace all his, like, well, I don't know, there's 10 batteries or something, mm-hmm. and he wants to get some new solar panels, you know, just for extra help with the, you know, electricity or whatever.
Yeah.
So, he wants to, like, replace it or upgrade it or something, but we can't find any place where to you can get any of those things.
I actually have a friend I work with who I can occasionally get batteries from, Deep Cycle Batteries. I'm going to give you my number for my regular Dave job. And,
okay.
Yeah, give me a call sometime afternoon today.
Okay.
All right, you ready?
Yes, I am.
Okay, it's 888 866 8970.
8970.
And just ask.
888-866-8970.
Yeah, and just ask for me. I should be there.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, Tom. Thanks. You very much.
Okay, you're welcome. Bye bye. Yeah, and I'll double check on the battery. I don't know what we have in inventory right now for batteries. I know we had. I have a friend who is in the. Surplus business, and he gets in what we call telecom batteries. So these are batteries that are used to power cell phone towers and stuff like that. And they're used batteries that get swapped out because they have to stay at top capacity, and they're really good, high quality batteries that last a long time. And at any rate, I'll check and see what he's got available because they were quite economical. These batteries can get really expensive really fast. And we do have panels available as well, so that's an easy one. Back to the phones we go. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Good morning, Tom. How are you? I love your show.
Good. Thanks.
Hey, I have a question. I was looking downstairs the other day and decided that I was going to replace my old basement windows. And, of course, they're made like whatever you could fit into a foundation in the 30s, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I came up with a replacement window from my favorite Orange Dome store and put them in. And on the top and bottom, I can shim it with a piece of pine to make up the distance. But on the sides, there's only like a quarter of an inch, and you fasten these hopper-type windows through the side.
Mm-hmm.
What would you use to fill those cracks in that I can't do with wood? In other words, the top would be good.
Yep.
And it fits tight on the bottom, but on the sides, I can't screw it all the way in because, of course, it would pull a frame, but I can't sure. cut a shim that small and expect it to not crack when I screw it either.
I would foam it.
Foam it?
Yep.
Is there a different type?
It gets a little tricky because foam can expand and cause a problem.
Exactly. That happened to my brother. Yeah.
And here's – well, first of all, I never used – you would use a minimal expanding foam, so it problem becomes a lot less. I don't like not living without some adventure in my life, so I use regular foam. And usually, you know, I've done this a lot, so I kind of have a feel for how much to get in there. But if I get caught, it's not the end of the world, because what I'll do is I'll take a saw and cut the foam with the saw. And the saw kerf a lot of times will relieve enough of the pressure to make it okay.
About where it's slow.
And ideally, you want it all stuck there because the foam is a pretty good adhesive, especially over a broad surface of a window. Even a basement window might only be 8 inches tall. You know, it's sure. 3 inches wide. You've got a lot of surface area there that makes contact with the foundation, and it'll stay pretty well in place, especially if you've got the wood on the top and the bottom. But I would use foam, and I would get the minimal expanding just to, you know, not drive yourself crazy.
And then the next question, if I can. I noticed that they had a tank set up there with two different pipes that you could actually, what I'm thinking about doing is, you know, where the floor joists run over the sill.
Yeah.
And someone here tried to put, you know, regular rock insulation in there, and it really didn't accomplish much.
Right.
Is that a good idea to use that to fill those, or am I better off getting a contractor to come in and say, hey, let's do it, and I can charge you X amount? I mean, is it cost effective?
Well, it's quick and easy to have the contractor come in, but if you have the time and you want to do it, if you got a sheet of foam, and a sheet might do the whole house, and you measured and cut and fit and then used can foam to seal the edges, you're going to get, you know, the same effect. And I would even leave the rock wool in place and just foam right over it if you can compress the rock wool a little bit.
Sure, got you. Yep, that works. Okay.
But you're welcome. Well, make sure that you do seal, though, where the sill is sitting on the foundation as well. You know, those if there's layers of wood there, you want to seal all those cracks either with caulk or with the foam.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Okay, you're welcome.
Bye-bye. Have
Thanks.
A good day.
You too. Yeah, so that'll do it. Hey, we got a text in here. Are steel studs as good as traditional 2x4s for interior walls? Installation easier, quicker with steel? They are, yes and no. Steel studs tend to be kind of spindly until you get sheathing on them. They, for somebody who works with them, they're faster. For somebody who doesn't work with them, I don't know. I think they're slightly cheaper. a lot of times when people use steel studs for interior walls, they use an inch and a half steel stud, which is a very flimsy feeling thing until you put sheetrock on either side, and then it stiffens up. I kind of prefer using wood just because I got no good reason to rationalize one over the other. I think, as I say, the steel is apt to be a little bit cheaper. You can trim it with a tin snip instead of using a saw making sawdust. The one negative in terms of putting in a steel wall is when you're wiring, you've got to have some pass-through plastic protectors so you don't have Romex laying on the bare steel where there's holes punched in it. Or you're using conduit. So that becomes an issue. That's why I kind of like using wood. Wood is kind of insulative electrically. You're not going to abrade away a piece of wire in the wall because it's on a sharp steel edge. It's on a comparatively soft wooden edge. So for what that's worth. Let's do this. We're going to take a break here. When we come back, we will we'll take some more calls. How about that? That's a plan right there. We'll be right back. Hey, we're back. It's 919. It's hot and cold. Saturday morning. Good morning again. I'm Tom. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. We got a text line, 601-207-4478. And we got a phone call. We're going to the phones right now. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Oh, yes. I have a question about plywood or Advantech for sheathing.
Sure.
What do you recommend?
If money was no object, plywood. Advantech, I'm drawing a blank on the name. The coated Huber product, I think, is probably a really good bet, though, too, especially if you're using the tape to seal all the joints.
The Advantech has a lifetime warranty, and I don't think there's any warranty at all with plywood.
Yeah, there's not. So that, you know, probably gives it the advantage. Plus, you've got the tape, which, you know, I'm stupid about tape. I love using tape, and I think the tape that they make for that product is one of the best things going. So it's a cheap date, and it does a really good job of, you know, just sealing the building. It makes the building tight and without having to mess around with Typar or anything like that.
Okay, so any seams in the plywood where it doesn't seam up real good, you want to tape those up?
Any seams in the Vantec you want to seal with the tape.
Right.
You know, most of it's going to be 4x8 sheets. And they make the tape they make for the seams is just like a big wide roll of tape. They also make one that they sent me a sample of once, and it's stretchable. So you would take this and instead of cutting it into straight pieces, you could actually stretch it around windows and doors and have one continuous piece of tape, which I just thought was the coolest thing ever till I priced it, and it scared the living daylights out of me. It probably costs the same to make, but the tape, you got to use the tape. If you're going to do it, use the tape.
Okay, so would using the tape and also doing the Typar wrap around it, would that be overkill? Or
yes, you don't need the Typar.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, you're welcome. Bye-bye. Let's see, line two. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Good morning, oh knowledgeable one.
Okay.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
You think, okay. Listen, what is your opinion on painting vinyl siding?
You can do it. And it actually, you know, if you get a little bit of weathering on the vinyl, which obviously you would probably do if you're painting it, and it tends to set up the surface to accept the paint well. The catch is with vinyl is that it'll kind of scratch off with your fingernail if somebody wants to scratch it. There are specific paints made for vinyl that probably stick better, but regular latex paint will paint vinyl. It might not bond as well as a latex paint that's made for painting vinyl siding. But yes, you can do it.
Yeah, no, I knew that, and I also know that it does not fade. I mean, everything fades, but it does not fade as fast.
Yep.
Or crack and chip.
Right.
And the other, I had another question about it, and I can't remember. But that's good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, you could do a really nice job. I have cellular vinyl trim on my house, and I use it a lot. I've got some trim for around the doors in the new building we have, and it's the same dimensions as wood trim, but it's dimensionally pretty stable. It does not absorb water, and paint stays stuck to it. And having said that, I don't think it's basically the same, similar surface to vinyl siding. It's a board, basically, and it's rigid, where vinyl is a little bit flexible. Vinyl siding is a little bit flexible. But you get that same kind of bond in terms of paint sticking to it. And I just use regular latex house paint. I don't go for anything special. And the other thing that's... As the caller alluded to, if you're putting a acrylic latex house paint on vinyl siding, it doesn't. It tends to protect the plastic. The plastic will break down under ultraviolet radiation. Acrylic plastic will not. Acrylic is in latex acrylic paint, so the paint tends to last, and the color tends to hold better for most colors. Not, I think certain darker colors like dark red and things like that are apt to fade just because the sunlight is pretty powerful stuff. It's big medicine. Let's see. Did I see some text here? Yeah, from Tom up at Sangerville. He's going to plant sale and graduation party. Got all the bases covered, a graveside memorial, plant sale, and a graduation party. That covers just about all aspects of life, Tom. So good day for it all. So, good luck. Let's see. Over to line one. We got some time here still. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Yes. I'd like to get some information of any advantages for incinerating toilets.
Ooh, I'm afraid I don't have a tremendous amount of experience on these. I know they do work, and I think... you know, I guess if I was in the market and looking for a toilet for off, you know, without a septic system, I really can't tell you anything about them because I have literally never laid hands on one. The alternative to an incinerating toilet is a composting toilet, and there's a couple of variations on the theme. Of those, I know something. The composting toilet uses peat moss as a medium. Now, you're not just going to the bathroom in peat moss, but the container below has some peat moss in it as a medium that allows bacteria to break down the material, and once a year you empty it out. There is also a variant on that where you have something which is like a flushable. It is a flush toilet, similar to what would be in a sailboat. So it might use a very small volume of water to flush, and goes to a tank that's in the basement that is your composting tank. So the septic tank, if you will, stays in the basement. Again, it's based out of with peat moss. And you empty it once a year or something like that. So that would be an alternative way because both of these, you're really not using a lot of fuel as you would with an incinerating toilet. So that's the other option. It's reminding me of a story I'm not going to share on. I usually will share gross stories on the air because it's my radio show, but I will not, I'm not going to relate. I can't do it. I got a story about somebody who was living without a septic system and what they did, which was, it was technological and disgusting. and I just want you to thank me in advance for not, or thinking it. You don't have to call in or even text me. Just think positive thoughts that I'm not going to share the story with you. If I see you in person, I'll tell you the story. But the airwaves, there could be, it just was gross. Yeah, I got a text here. Please don't. I'm eating breakfast. I'm not. I have my limits. I really do. And I've reached it. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Good morning. You're on The Voice of Maine.
Yeah. Tell Tom to tell the story. Don't thank him for not telling it.
No. You'll thank me. It's too much. I'll tip my hand just enough, and then your wild imaginations can go into play here. Okay. I said it was technological. A microwave oven was involved. Do I need to say anything more? I don't think so. Yeah. 1-800-966-1039 is the number. I'm taking a break. That's what I'm doing right now. I'll be back. Stay with us. We're not going anywhere. No, sir. Not at all. Where is it? There we go. I knew it was there. We're back. It's 9:35. It's hot and cold. Excuse me, Saturday morning, and the phone number is 1-800-966-1039, and we got a phone call coming in right now, right there on the magic board. Let's do this and that, and we can talk. Good morning. You're on The Voice of Maine.
Good morning, Tom. I was having a conversation with somebody, and I had get it to a point where I have them completely lost. And I know you're the guru of Priuses.
I try to be, but what's up?
Okay, we were talking about smart cars and batteries, and I was starting to ask him about being cold up here, if the battery life would last longer. But I mean, where I live is like 20 miles away from any stores.
Mm.
And I was also wondering about battery memory. If you don't use the battery all the way up, will it create a charging point where it doesn't completely charge the batteries all the time?
Good questions. excuse me. Being in Maine, the one blessing we have, being in what can at times be miserably cold, is that it does not affect battery life in Priuses. I can tell you this from direct experience. People down south don't have that luxury because the heat really does a number on the batteries. The batteries won't hold as much charge in cold weather, but it doesn't seem to affect the longevity. And I can tell you, and people who know me who've come in and talk cars have heard this story too many times, but I've had two cars. I know I've had more than two, but two Priuses that I knew came from down south. They were gorgeous. There wasn't a hint of rust on them. And both cars needed multiple battery rebuilds to the point where after the third time back, they never usually come back, but after the third time back, I said, you know what? I'm taking this battery out. I'm putting in a battery from a car in Maine, and they never come back. So that's my experience, and it's kind of anecdotal, but seems to bear out. And having spoken to folks who have done mechanical work down south, they tell me that 12-volt batteries have the same problem in the south. They just don't last because of the heat. And now, in the car, the battery's always conditioned. It's always heated and cooled. But if you're parking in Florida in a parking lot or Louisiana or something, and it's July, when you shut the car off, the air conditioner shuts off, and that battery just sits there and toasts. And it's in contact with the bottom of the car, so it does get pretty hot.
But I was also wondering, use any power tools outdoors, and those batteries will drain quite fast.
In a hybrid car, it's not a big deal because you're always, if you've got a computer there monitoring it, so if the battery starts to get low, the motor will start to recharge the battery. The gas engine is going to recharge it. So that's why in the wintertime, one of the reasons the mileage tends to go down, because you're spending a little more energy recycling keeping the battery where it's supposed to be. Whereas this time of year, where it is perfect, 70-degree weather, almost everybody's getting 50-plus miles per gallon without thinking hard, without paying attention to the way they drive, because it's just kind of a sweet spot for the battery.
Okay, but what I'm thinking of, we was having an argument about electric cars, about where that's all it is a battery.
Yep.
And I was talking about the cold in Maine, and I mean, if you live anywhere in Maine, you travel in 10, 15 miles just go to the store, about battery memory, that if you don't use the whole battery, if you keep charging it at, say, 30%, you can't get the full. I was kind of wondering, can you get the full use out of a battery like that?
With a pure electric car, you've got a battery management system that tends to nurture the battery and maintain it at its optimal level. So I don't think it's a big issue. Some of the early Leafs had issues with batteries. I think that had more to do with the quality of the cells they were using than anything else. And you're right, they do start to lose capacity over time. I think that's changing as the cell chemistries get better. And I think that, coupled with the fact that any lithium battery, which is what most of these cars are using, lithium batteries, has some form of battery management system. And the car manufacturers, I think, are doing a pretty decent job of integrating high-quality electronics into running the cars and also in maintaining the batteries. And it's a real art, and I can't claim to be that up on all the things that the people who manufacture chargers do, but it's getting extremely sophisticated. So I'm not worried so much about battery memory. I know on Priuses, people think that they need to have a pack charger and occasionally cycle the whole pack up. And I think it does help a little bit, but it's probably not worth the cost in the overall scheme of things for a hybrid to do that. Electric car, I think it's probably designed into the system because you have it, you're charging it every day. Plus, an electric car usually is left plugged in while it's not being used. So the batteries tend to be maintained at the proper temperature, so they're not, they're not going to suffer from climatic extremes.
Okay, I appreciate it. You're talking to an old combustion engine person, and
yeah,
I'm thinking about switching over and it's just the gas economic. The gas prices are going to go up, and taxes are going to go up on the gas. I just seriously considering switching. We had this argument, and neither one of us was knowledgeable, so I said, I know who to call.
Well, you know, it's I'm not sure we're 100% there for everybody yet in terms of electric cars, but we're a hell of a lot closer than we were 5 years ago. And
I don't want to go completely electric because I'm just thinking as Maine winter snow, we had a 3-foot snowstorm last year. I really don't want to go with an electric car.
Yep.
And
I hear you. I hear you.
End up losing charge and being stuck in the middle of the road.
Yeah, hybrid, you know, hybrid gets you around that. And that's why there's so many Priuses on the road to Maine. I mean, you know, they're reliable. They do a good job, and you don't have to suffer from range anxiety. We sold a Prius yesterday to a couple that had a Nissan Leaf. And specific interest was that the spouse was concerned about, you know, running out of energy in the electric car. So having a Prius, you basically can go anywhere. They love the Leaf. I mean, it's a great car. But it's I think its winter range was probably 50, 60 miles. And they could work with that okay. But that, you know, that's not good enough for some folks. For a lot of us. I mean, Maine's a big state.
I work about 43 miles away from the house.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cutting it kind of close in the winter.
Yeah. Question is, the Prius is coming four-wheel drive.
They do now. They just came out with one, I'll be honest, I haven't even looked at it, but I believe the two rear wheels are probably electric. You have electric motor, I don't know how it's set up, and I should because I figure I'm not going to be laying hands on one for probably 4 years, but they just came out with one, and I don't think it's crazy money.
Okay. I was just trying to get information because, like I said, I'm driving a 95 Ford Ranger, which it's a great vehicle. I got 20,000 miles on it. Runs great.
Yeah.
But 18 miles per gallon, it's getting a little ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, the other one that could make sense would be something like a RAV4 hybrid, which is not a huge SUV. I have a Highlander hybrid that we have up for sale right now, and I used it last night to drive to Bangor, and I got somewhere in the mid 30s for the mileage. And that's a big vehicle, and we had it full, and it was you know, the problem is that when you have a four wheel drive vehicle, you've got a lot of stuff turning that tends to use up energy. So that's, of course, front wheel drive vehicles get better MPGs because you're not turning all that extra stuff. All the extra gearing and stuff, and that can be very energy intensive in terms of having that extra capacity. That's why a pure electric, I mean, when electric cars become the norm, a four-wheel drive electric car is going to probably have four motors, one at each wheel, and they're going to turn on and off as needed, and that's going to be a pretty slick setup. And in theory, it should be economical. We'll see how that plays out in reality. But, you know, the marketplace is changing rapidly, and GM's really seems to be taking a lead. I had a guy come in a couple of years ago, bought a Prius. He came in with his daughter. She was buying a Prius. He was in a Chevrolet Bolt. He drove up from Brunswick, and I asked him if he need, do you need to plug in, you know, while we're talking? And he said, no, I'll make it back. Cool. That's a pretty good run from Brunswick to Searsport and back again without having to plug in. That's a 300-mile range. And it's not a big car, but it's still pretty impressive. And that was 2-3 years ago. And, you know, they're not getting worse. They're getting better. So,
yeah, that's why I was just trying to – I figure it's time to upgrade. I mean, 23-year-old pickup truck, she's runs great, but – it's time to get something a little more economical.
Yep.
But I don't really want to go pure electric because I don't trust technology yet because I've seen minus 40 up here in Maine, and I lived here all my life. I've seen weeks minus 40.
Yeah.
And I just don't trust electricity draining too fast on an electric car.
Yeah, electric car, you're going to certainly lose range when it's that cold. No doubt about it. Yeah. So hybrid is a good fit.
Well, I appreciate it.
Okay. All right,
appreciate
your call.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Yeah. Yeah, we could spend a lot of time talking about it. And honestly, a pure electric, I think a lot is changing quickly. Over the next few years, we're going to see some dramatic stuff happening. And, you know, it was kind of interesting. You hear a lot of stuff about Tesla in the news, and they're not making money, or they are making money, or Elon Musk is doing something crazy. I can't imagine how stressed out this guy must be. So I'll cut him some slack. I just wish somebody would filter him a little bit, keep him away. I think they are keeping him away from saying goofy things. But the thing that I read just yesterday I thought was interesting is that Tesla generates a lot of economy credits. The federal government has a certain standard that all car manufacturers need to meet in terms of miles per gallon for the fleet. And, of course, a car like Tesla meets that handily because they're not burning any gasoline. So they're, one of the things that's kept Tesla going is selling those credits to the companies like GM, while GM is getting up to speed. And of course, there is cross-pollinating between the two. So a quick side story to Tesla, just because I brought it up, is the fact that I got a phone call, oh God, 5 years ago, maybe 5-6 years ago. This guy calls up, and somehow he told me, maybe I recognized his name, and you could look him up. It's J.B. Straubel, who is the chief technology officer for Tesla. And he's a kid compared to me. I mean, he's a young man. I don't even know if he's 40. He's in his 30s. And being the goof that I am, I start talking to him about electric cars. Now, what I have done with electric cars is primitive. Really primitive. Like 1900s primitive. It's just where my head is at. And it's simple. And they worked well in 1900. I mean, they got good range and did a lot of interesting things. So I start talking to this guy who's making these, you know, cars that are shot into outer space. You know, I mean, they're technologically so far advanced. And he never calls back. And I thought, you know what? Thomas Edward, you got a size 13 foot, you'd put that whole sucker right in your mouth. And I felt really stupid that, you know, he probably hears a lot of people talking to him about electric cars. Oh, yeah, you know, in the old days I used to do. So anyway, 6 months later, it was Christmas night at the Gosey house. Kids had gone home. I'm sitting down there watching TV. I got the computer in front of me. I don't know what I was doing. And I get an email. Somebody asking me about a tank for a solar system or for a wood boiler. And we went back and forth. And he was tickled that I was corresponding with him on Christmas night. He was pleased because he was, you know, doing the same thing I was doing, basically. And he says, I'll call you tomorrow and I'll place the order. I said, well, I'll tell you what. Let me know your shipping address so I can get a shipping quote for you. I could have, you know, the total. So he gives me the shipping address. It's Palo Alto, California. So I said, geez, you know, it's probably some kind of high-tech company. I should Google map it. I Google map it, and I'm looking at Tesla Motors. I'm like, oh, this is the guy. So he calls back the next day, and I learned my lesson. I didn't say boo about electric cars. And I sold him a tank with heat exchangers, and just a nice guy. And subsequently, he needed another heat exchanger, and he had me ship it to his house. And so I have to Google map that. And his house, if you Google map it, you know, the satellite view is you see a lot of photovoltaics all over everything. And he's on the Palo Alto. Palo Alto is like a peninsula, on a peninsula. He's on the ocean side, go figure, in between Redwood Forest Reserves. It must be a stunning sight. And anyway, just a nice guy. It's strange, small world. Here I am, some schmo in Maine who makes tanks. Oh, the other thing he did ask me this, because Elon Musk has solar businesses in California. You know, they do solar, mostly photovoltaics. But he says to me, well, gee, how big's your company? And you know, what am I going to do? I can't lie. I said, well, there's three of us. That was the end of that conversation. Because he was intrigued by what, I mean, we do some interesting stuff. And oddly enough, I got a call yesterday from a company in California looking for some really big tanks, doing big solar hot water projects. So that was kind of interesting. So this is the time of year we get busy with solar, so I don't have time to build my shelves. Well, I'm going to build the shelves this week. I'm going to report back to you next week about the shelving situation, because actually the shelves are for the tank business. All the tank manufacturing stuff is sitting on the floor in the shop, taking up room. So that's what it's for. So that'll be very exciting. And at some point we will have an open house where folks can come and see all this of which I speak, but not yet, because I think anybody who has walked in the shop just inadvertently is kind of overwhelmed by the fact that it looks like a hoarder's paradise. It's not a hoarder's paradise, and I am putting stuff in the dumpster as we go along. But it is a bit of a mess as we try to get catch our breath and get organized. And it's for any of you who moved, you know what it's like. Anyway, look, Pete has not called in today. I assume that's because he's busy, because we had a bunch of people who are going to come in this weekend to look at cars. So I'll have to apologize for not hearing from Pete. I think we got time for one quick call here. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Oh, good morning, Tom. Speaking of hybrid cars, have you ever been to the Civpo Auto Museum? Last time I was there, it was like around a 1900 hybrid gas electric car. It was a two-seat tiller operated with a front flip down rumble seat. And it was right around 1900. They had hybrid gas electric cars.
Yeah, I have not seen that, but I saw the one Jay Leno's got, and I'm forgetting the name of the car. But it's interesting that it kind of makes a lot of sense that you could have done both at the time. And I was on this tear years ago where I was buying every old electric car book and magazine I could find. And there were magazines kind of like, Motor Trend or something from like 1908 that were dedicated to electric cars. And then they got pretty decent range. They were getting 80 miles. And so there'd be a whole bunch of these folks who would go out on a tour and, go on an 80-mile round trip in their electric cars in, the 1920s. And that, of course, all disappeared. And I've got to disappear because we're out of time for this week, and we will be back next week, same time, same place. And enjoy it's going to be a great weekend. It's not going to rain. How are the flowers going to survive?